Continuing the study of science and health from the standpoint of its categories of capitalized synonymous terms for God. Summary of the sixth chapter, Science, Theology, Medicine. We would ask the student always to remember the particular standpoint and reason for the study of the capitalized terms, that it is to encourage each one of us to dig into the text for ourselves, to let the text itself speak to us, to make notes, if we wish to, as discussed on the introduction tape to this series. Gordon Brown, London, June, 1972.
Science, Theology, Medicine. 57 pages of what is surely the most closely knit, profoundly practical teaching which we have met with in the textbook so far. And the question is how, in line with our practice regarding the five preceding chapters, to do justice to a summary of even our present humble understanding. Humanly, the task is formidable, and it will require all the unself-love, all the patience, all the alert consecration we can muster in order to begin to appreciate what these pages are saying. So let us approach them in this spirit. With the book open at page 107, and with all the capitalized synonymous terms for God, the seven of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, including the combinations of life, truth, and love, the four of Word, Christ, Christianity, science, including the different ways in which the term science is employed, marked throughout the chapter so that they are immediately discernible to us in a paragraph or on a page. For as we know, it is with the meanings of these capitalized terms, individually and in their relationship with one another, that the pure, healing science of Christian Science lies. Simultaneously then, as animal magnetism is unmasked, Christian Science is revealed, unveiled, discovered. No longer, because of the teachings of the first five chapters, do we believe that man is an individual persona or mask through whom either evil or good sounds. Instead of evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, etc., coming forth out of the heart of man, man himself shines forth out of the heart of God. Far from being a hypocritical outside mask on the face of God through which God speaks, man is the very innermost self-expression of God. As Jacob says, in the spirit of this sixth chapter, I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And his world, in consequence, is no longer an animal magnetism world, but is, as represented by his brother Esau, the very face of God. And this is the purpose of our fundamental engagement with the capitalized terms in our chapter-by-chapter study of the full text of Science and Health, to see God face to face as the spiritual reality of our world. And this is the underlying teaching of Science, Theology, Medicine, the successor to Animal Magnetism Unmasked, and therefore it is the purpose of Christian Science itself. For here we are told how, in the year 1866, I discovered the Christ Science and named my discovery Christian Science. Now, in view of the unmasking of animal magnetism, this discovery or revelation cannot any longer be regarded as personal in the ordinary human sense. If we were following the order of the chapters in parallel relationship with the culminating 16th chapter, the Apocalypse, the 6th section of the Apocalypse corresponding to this 6th chapter of the textbook is where the woman actually brings forth her man-child. And this woman in the second section of the Apocalypse corresponding to the second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist, has already been presented in her holy impersonal depict as generic man and not as a mortal person. And thus the standpoint of this 6th chapter is really that of the world itself giving birth to the reality of its own being in Christian Science, despite all the efforts of the great red dragon animal magnetism to break the revelation up in pieces by claiming that it is personal, so keeping the world itself in a state of warlike disarray. Mrs. Eddy knew and illustrated in the symbols of her founding mission, particularly her church symbols, that none other than generic man himself, as he is in truth, is really the mother and the leader of Christian Science. On page 107, therefore, having been told in the first Bible text that the revelation is God's revelation and is not after man, we find the chapter as a whole based on the parable of the leaven, which a woman, typical of man therefore in the generic sense, places in 3 measures of meal until the entire lump of dough is leavened. Are science, theology, medicine then 3 different things? To material sense, yes. Physical science, mystic theology, materia medica. But to spiritual sense, they are 3 indispensable aspects of the one idea of God as revealed in Christian Science. In other words, science, capital S, when found to be true theology, the theos logos, or God himself speaking, when it is found to be what the textbook calls the religion of love, capital L, then it is the medicine which heals and transforms the world. This is Christian Science. It is that which, like yeast placed in a flat, heavy, lifeless lump of dough, raises the whole of humanity from mortality or the dead. The word leaven is from a root meaning to raise, to make light, to alleviate. As material medicine is supposed to heal the corporeal body, so the leaven of divine science, theology, medicine delivers the children of men, as the text says, from every ill that flesh is heir to until the whole body of mankind is resurrected and full of life. So let us begin at the opening paragraph, focusing our attention on the capitalized terms. And we see that what is revealing itself here at this very moment in the midst of us, as us, is the Christ science, the full manifestation of God in its science, and that this is the divine laws of life, truth, and love, the name for which is Christian Science, so that what is discovered is, in fact, as it says in the marginal heading there, Christian Science. Now, the Christ science, the divine laws, that science, of life, truth, and love, Christ as the complete manifestation of God, which apply to everything, everywhere, throughout this manifestation, that is, to everything Christian. So that Christ science is Christian science, that is, the science of Christianity. Now, as far as the student is concerned, it is the first five chapters, from prayer to animal magnetism unmasked, which graciously prepare him for this new standpoint, this standpoint of the self-revelation of God as man, and which appears as the final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. Final, yes, as absolute divine principle, but infinite and unending in its continuous self-revelation as life, truth, and love. Absolute divine implies nothing besides. And this is what makes the principle apodictical, that is, self-demonstrating, self-proving, revealing its infinitude to be absolute and divine. It necessarily heals humanity. An ever-presence, supreme in power, necessarily delivers mankind from every ill that flesh is heir to. That is, it leavens or resurrects the whole of human consciousness. This is more than God with us, in the sense of divinity having come to humanity. It is humanity in the very heart of divinity, God, as it were, full of us, like the birth-giving mother in the sixth section of the Apocalypse. Hence the laws of life, truth, and love, the laws of Father, Son, Mother, one and indivisible. And this, of course, is life, as we find it there on line 17. God is our life, capital L. This means that life, little l, does not, therefore, inhere in the body. We, man, are this life, little l, which, as the very body of life, capital L, inheres in life, capital L. Now, over to 108.5, inevitably, life is coupled with love. The divine law of life and love. Note the insistence of the idea of law in this science section of the chapter. This comes as a heavenly conviction. Convincere, which means to say that it conquers through proof. As such, it is the gift of divine grace and the workings of divine power. Law, power, grace, spiritually inseparable. The standpoint of this sixth chapter is therefore that of grace itself. From the first chapter to the fifth, this divine grace has been at work in our consciousness, graciously preparing us to be this divinely given grace. Our life, holy, a thing of love. The law of life and love is that, humanly speaking, we learn love, little l, and the price we pay for this is the acknowledgement that matter possesses neither sensation nor life. This, paradoxically, is what the gift, grace, costs. Well, what is at work, line 10, is divine mind. In paying this price, we see that only the mortal sense of mind suffers, for our true God mind cannot suffer. God is our life on the previous page, then certainly God is also our mind. And this is the first reference to the term that really dominates this chapter. The term from the category of the four which is dominant is science. And this, of course, gives us the clue to what the chapter is basically about. The science of mind. The science of mind healing. The lesser demonstration proving the greater in the next paragraph conveys the idea of a little leaven at work, leavening with scientific exactitude the whole of human consciousness, that is, raising it from the dead. And this we see on line 19 there is the fundamental purpose of the revelation, that of lifting humanity out of the shadow of the death valley. And hence, if we were to glance over to the final paragraph of the chapter as a whole, we would see the theme of it is death swallowed up in victory. Now, to this end, we learn certain truths, little t, in divine science. Little t truth in relation to capital T truth, as on line 24 there, is man in relation to God. The true identity of humanity inseparable from divinity, which in a total sense is signified by the term divine science. The resurrecting truths in question are that all real being, little b, man, is in God, mind. Mind, God, is certainly not in man. If it were, mind would be mortal, as described at the end of the paragraph. Mind would say, I am matter, or matter is my subjective state. In divine science, the subjective state of mind, capital M, is spirit, capital S, there on line 29, mind, capital M, forever declaring of itself, I am infinite spirit. And mind, being spirit in this way, is life, truth, and love. Line 22. All of which is truth itself. Line 24. And anything that declares against this is error. Supposed material breakup of truth, or where the truths of divine science have supposedly departed from truth, which is impossible. Now this, on 109.3, is seen to be mind science, or the science of mind, the single leading factor of which is that mind is all and matter is naught. These are not two factors, but one only. And therefore, the principle involved is indeed absolute and divine. So that when, in healing the sick, sensible evidence, line 7 there, supports this great fact, revealed incontrovertibly in Christian Science, that mind is all in all, this is simply the divine principle proving itself to be absolute and divine, proving that the only realities are divine mind and idea, and therefore that matter is naught. This, line 17, is the principle of all harmonious mind action. And it took 3 years searching the scriptures to arrive at it as the solution to the problem of mind healing. The science that lay behind primitive Christian healing with its holy, uplifting faith had to be known. And absolute conclusions, that is, the science itself, were won through the threefold order of divine revelation, divine reason, divine demonstration. These four factors, which we know today correspond to the order of the Word, Christ, Christianity, science, constitute the revelation of truth in the understanding. This is science, the new spiritual idea being borne to earth, signifying that unto us, generic man, the woman in the apocalypse, a child is born, which has nothing to do with persons and their doctrines, but is wholly of God. Line 30. The idea itself is that of spirit. Over now to 110, line 1. Spirit, possessing all power, filling all space, constituting all science. Science, constituted wholly of spirit and not matter. And this being primeval existence, reality absolutely good, not evil. The impact of which on human consciousness brings about the perfecting of man. Now this reconciliation of reason and revelation, leading thirdly to demonstration, has its foundations in the scriptures. Marginal heading, line 15. And therefore, Science and Health, the second of the two textbooks, contains science and truth, truth little t, line 23, which is the science of man's health or wholeness, and therefore the power of Christian Science to heal minds and bodies. Now, to spiritually understand truth, capital T, in this way is the science of what is otherwise believing on Christ, with signs of healing following. We're now at the bottom of 110. And 111, 2, these demonstrable truths, little t, of Christian Science handle specifically the vague hypotheses of agnosticism, pantheism, theosophy, etc., while at the end of the paragraph, divine science handles the more general concept of human will, or the sensuous reason of the human mind. Now, the next paragraph, starting 111.6, is a tremendous one. Christian Science, it says, is natural, not supernatural, metaphysical, not physical. This, on line 10, is Christian Science as the science of spirit, which is the science of God and man. Line 7. How often we found in our study that spirit is not, as it were, just God. Spirit denotes God and man. God and man, one and inseparable, is what God, spirit, is. This inseparability of God and man as that which alone is natural introduces us for the first time in the book to what is called divine metaphysics. And the term, having once been introduced, it comes again and again in the succeeding pages. Starting line 11, we have the principle of divine metaphysics, then the practice of divine metaphysics, then the rules of divine metaphysics, then the science of divine metaphysics, all operating to reverse perverted, that is, unnatural, physical hypotheses as to deity, and showing, as in optics, what the inverted image is meant to represent. And let us note from now on the frequent use of such words as reverse, perverse, inverse, particularly reverse, all from the same Latin root, vertere, to turn. It began back there on 109.4, where the revelation that mind is all in all is said to be incontrovertible. That is, it cannot be reversed or turned back. And thus, divine metaphysics, being the reverse of sense evidence, reverses this evidence as being a perverted inversion of itself. Looking at the reflection of a mountain in the lake, the image we see is inverted. This is because we are on the other side of the lake from the mountain. If we were the mountain itself, looking at itself reflected in the lake, the image would not be inverted, but the right way up. Now, this rule of reversal is the practice, in the practice of the principle of divine metaphysics, involves, line 12 now, the utilization of the power of truth over error. The power of truth, capital T, lies in the fact that there can be no possible departure of truth, little t, from truth, capital T, therefore no error or actual inverted image. And this implies that natural science, line 20, is really Christian science, line 24, where even what appear as physical effects, line 22, have a final spiritual cause. For in reversing an inverted image of itself, Christian science, divine metaphysics, simply shows what this inverted image is meant to represent. Line 17. And this is because in the science of spirit, there are not two things, but one thing, which when seen from the point of view of truth's wholeness, appears as it really is. 9:30, a metaphysical system of treating disease is at work, in which mind governs the body not partially but wholly. Mind's image of its own body is never inverted, and therefore this image reverses the sense evidence that it is. This system, line 32, proves itself in the practice of healing. Persons do not prove it. And we come in consequence over the page to 112.1 to the one school of truth in the marginal heading, or the one school of Christian science in which proof, the demonstration of this healing system, is the only teacher. The fact that no part of truth can ever depart from the oneness and wholeness of truth itself is divine science, line 12. And this, therefore, eschews man-made systems, such as the Socratic, Platonic, or Spencerian systems, as being erroneous departures from truth. A borrowed gleam of divinity is not really divine at all, but wholly human in origin and tendency, for the simple reason that it is impossible to take a gleam of truth out of the total effulgence of truth, and it still remain true. And therefore, what operates this school of truth is the infinite one itself, capital O, line 16. The great giver to humanity of one divine healing principle, one Christ idea, complete with spiritual rules and laws and their demonstration. For what this school is based upon is statement and proof one. Its genuineness lies in its being built on the foundation of what has already been stated and proved to be true, line 24, allowing no departures therefrom, no borrowing, line 12, no stealing, line 31. It is the school of the infinite oneness of being. Now we're in the section of the chapter emphasizing science. In the section on theology, we shall be called upon to build the true idea of church, which is body, upon the rock Christ. Science, school, theology, church. Science's living body. Neither school nor church can be built on sandy foundations, the marginal heading there, which would be the rock-like one supposedly broken up into fragments. And we return to the subject of rules, fixed rules, 113.2, for practicing the principle of divine metaphysics, the one principle of all science. On page 111, the rule was reversing sense testimony. Here it is the rule of the unity of letter and spirit. Now note in this paragraph the terms science and Christian science. Science must be Christian science, else it is not demonstrable, and therefore there is no school. The danger with the concept science used by itself is that its letter can seem to be very plentiful with very little of its spirit, lines 4 and 5. But this is not so with Christian science, line 6. Adding the adjective Christian means that science is the science of Christianity, where letter and spirit are one. The heart and soul of Christian science is love, capital L, without which the letter of science by itself is a dead body, pulseless, cold, inanimate. In the coming theology section, we shall find in Christianity the true idea of religion as the religion of love. And without this binding, truly religious element of love, the letter of science is dead. The body has no heart, no soul. Now, four fundamental, self-evident propositions of divine metaphysics called reversible propositions in the marginal heading. And what they stand for is the simultaneity or agreement on line 12 of statement and proof, as we find this at work in the one school of Christian science. Truth, capital T, line 14, is that wherein statement and proof are metaphysically and mathematically one. To illustrate this, each proposition has to be read first forwards and then backwards. For example, God is all in all. Note the capital A and the little a. That is statement. But the fact that therefore all in all, little a, capital A, is God, is proof. That which comes from God as word or statement returns to God as works or proof, reversing, as it does so, the evidence of the physical senses. And thus the statement that God, spirit, being, all, nothing is matter, appears as proof when it follows that therefore matter is nothing, all being spirit God. When statement is divinity declaring itself, proof is instantaneous. Now at the bottom of 113, the presentation changes slightly, and we have the marginal heading, Metaphysical Inversions. Because divinely there is no pain in truth, capital T, therefore, humanly, there is no truth, little t, in pain. Because divinely there is no nerve in mind, capital M, therefore, humanly, there is no mind, little m, in nerve, and so on. The inverted image which claims that there is truth, little t, in pain, that the human is in pain, is righted by the fact that there is no pain in truth. For there the divine and the human, the capital T and the little t, are one. Hence, on 114.2 over the page, sick and sinful humanity is identical with mortal mind, where human and divine, flesh and spirit, evil and good, are supposedly two, whereas in truth, which is immortal mind, human and divine are coexistent and wholly good. Line 6. The senses testify to minds many, line 8, whereas in science, line 10, which reverses sense testimony, mind is one, as God and his thoughts, divinity, and the true idea of humanity, one. Now, to say that mind is mortal when in fact it is immortal, line 13, is simply a solecism in language. And here we approach the vital subject of language. Inevitably, of course, for the tremendous idea of translation is coming over there on the next page. Translation involves language, not in the ordinary philological sense of translation, say from French to English, but of humanity itself, from the apparent language of mortality or death into the language of immortality or life, like the translation of Jesus at the ascension, the resurrection and ascension, or as Paul says of Enoch, Enoch was translated that he should not see death. Ultimately, language is the word of God, identical with the universe itself. To the senses, the language of the universe is the terminology of matter. In science, it is that of ideas, the language of spirit. 114.21, the wine, the tongue, or the inspiration of spirit seems to be bottled up in a material technology. But this is appearance only, and therefore there can be translation. Whether in English the word is man or in French homme, the idea is the same in each case, and therefore homme can be translated into man. What we are concerned with in Christian science is the changeless reality of spirit. And because of the language of spirit on the one hand and the language of matter on the other, the language of truth and the language of error, the false concept, is translatable into the true idea. On page 115, the language of man's immortality, appearing through the scientific translation of immortal mind, translates humanity out of the apparent language of mortality into the language of immortality in the scientific translation of mortal mind. And this, as we learn over on 116.5, is science reversing the evidence of the senses so that the universe, in the marginal heading, is found to be spiritual instead of material. Back now to 114.23. All this is Christian science showing the scientific relation of man to God or the scientific relation of body to soul. It sets free the wine or spirit which seems to be imprisoned in material bottles like man in a mortal body or science in a finite terminology, and all because in divine science the universe, including man, is spiritual, harmonious, and eternal. That's on lines 27 and 28. The last capitalized term in this paragraph is science unqualified, line 29. Science shows that what is termed matter, but isn't really because it is spirit, is but the subjective state of what is termed mortal mind, but isn't really because it is mind. Mortal mind saying subjectively in the language of error, I am finite matter, is translated in science into immortal mind saying subjectively in the language of truth, I am infinite spirit. From 115, 1 to 11, we see that the language of spirit itself, which is the understanding of mind science, is spirituality and nothing to do with the intellect as such. There is a great obstacle, line 1, in the way of the coming first translation, and a great difficulty, line 9, relative to the second. The first is the inadequacy of material terms for the expression of metaphysical ideas. That statement. The second lies in giving the right impression when translating material terms back into the original tongue of ideas or spirituality. That being proof. Well, as Jesus showed, the order of spiritual translation is to work from immortal mind outwards, not from mortal mind upwards. Nothing returns to God, second translation, but that which first comes from God, first translations, namely ideas or divine reflection, line 18. This translates mortal mind as a solecism in language. It does not destroy it as something. We cannot destroy that which has no real existence, 114.7. But we can translate a misconception. At least truth can. So the order is God, man, idea, there in the first translation, divine synonyms, divine image, divine reflection, making its impact on physical depravity or unreality, first degree of the second translation, causing this to disappear in a moral transition, second degree, so that reality itself is experienced as spiritual and of the nature of understanding, third degree. But this reality, expressed as the sevenfold order, wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness, is man in God's image. 116.5, it shows us that, clearly identical with man in the first translation. And note how the word understanding occurs in both places. In other words, as we read on 116.8, the last is first and the first last. Undoubtedly, the key word is understanding, understanding God in terms of understanding man, the understanding of mind science, there on 115.2, which is spirituality itself and not intellectualism. So, the immediate, that is, timeless, object of understanding becomes to us not a material universe, matter, the subjective state of mortal mind, but spiritual universe. 116 in the marginal heading, everything, everywhere, an image in mind. And this signifies translation and life as against time and death. The immediate object of mind's understanding is its own subjective reality as spirit, not matter. And this brings us to identity or soul, the identity of the principle which is life, truth, and love. Note that this is the first time in the book that all seven synonyms are grouped together. The order here is principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. The quality divine predominates. And so although the term Christ is not here in the text, this idea of divinity appearing to humanity, and therefore of humanity appearing in its divinity, so that humanity is saved from believing it is made up of mortality, denotes the operation of the Christ. Now all this, 116.13, describes the aim of science, in the marginal heading, to give a correct view of Christian science, which works on metaphysics don't do. Unlike ordinary philosophical metaphysics, Christian science crowns the power of mind, capital M, as the Messiah or Christ. Christian science extinguishes all belief in matter, evil, disease, and death. Christian science insists that God is all and that matter is nothing beyond an image in mortal mind. Ordinary metaphysics don't do this. So, on the negative side, matter, the subjective state of mortal mind, is merely an image in mortal mind. While on the positive side, spirit is the subjective state of immortal mind, and this divine self-reflection forms the image in mind, which is man. Now coming down 116, the corporeal, bodily sense of man as mortal is translated into the incorporeal reality of God. The false sense of person and personal is translated into God as infinite person. At the top of 117, individuality is translated out of a sense of segregation and multiplicity into its true meaning as indivisibility, the indivisibility of God as one. Capital O, just as we had the infinite one, capital O, back there on page 112. We're still dealing, therefore, with the idea of language, 117.6, spiritual language in the marginal heading, the language of God's spirit. But in relation to spirit, it is man who is spiritual. And therefore the language whereby God's Spirit eternally declares himself is man, the understanding of God. The voicing of this language to humanity is necessarily accompanied by signs of healing. 117:12. Now 117:14, ears don't hear it, lips don't speak it, because, as we have learnt, the pure language of spirit is spirituality itself, which Jesus taught by symbols. Not abstractly or theoretically, for his own human life was the symbol. He illustrated and demonstrated life and truth in himself. And the human, thus reflecting the divine, gave him power to heal. Based on this principle, line 20, that God's voicing of himself is man, Jesus wrought a complete translation from the language of flesh into the language of spirit, the language of death and discord into the language of life and truth. Hence to Jesus the revelation of truth, line 27, the revelation of truth in the understanding, as we had it back on 109:22, embodied both his works and his words, proof as well as statement, in contrast to human reason based on sense evidence. This revelation of truth, in which all being is already whole, is the leaven of truth. Line 30 in the margin there. The science of Christ, as we turn over to 118:2, which, unlike the hypocritical doctrines of the Pharisees, raises humanity from the dead, translates science, theology, medicine as three modes of mortal thought. 118:19. Into what science, theology, medicine are divinely in their oneness and inseparability. So this science of Christ, line 12, which is Christ truth, is specifically the leaven of truth, on line 10, in that it destroys the entire mass of error, and specifically the leaven of spirit, line 23, in that it brings about a chemical change throughout the whole of mortal thought. Only that which is itself whole can possibly leaven the whole of consciousness. Well, this leaven of spirit reveals to us specifically what nature is, and what is natural law and order. At the foot of 118, the law of love show that nature and God are one. Under this law, the natural order of heaven comes down to earth, and heaven and earth are seen not to be two but one. Because spirit is thus love, there is no such thing in nature as a kingdom divided against itself. 118:27, just as in the next paragraph on 119, spirit resolves the two horns of the dilemma, which is under discussion there. in the paragraph beginning 119.17, where the subject is still God and nature in the marginal heading, the terms love and spirit appear again. 21 and 24. Clearly, nature is God's spirit, not matter, and its law is that of omnipresent love. Hence it is that natural good, line 21, is everywhere instead of unnatural evil. Now, inevitably, this true idea of nature takes our thought out into the universe. First, in terms of the solar system, line 29, the marginal heading there being the sun and soul. The relation of sun to earth in the solar system symbolizes the relation of soul to body. And from this point onwards, the idea of reversal by science of sense evidence, which was touched upon earlier, becomes more and more dominant. Christian Science, line 29, reverses the seeming relation of soul and body, just as symbolically astronomy reverses our human perception of the movement of the solar system. So, Christian Science is really the true science of astronomy. Everything is in a state of movement. Everything in the body is moving. And this means that body is tributary to mind. The moving body, man, the humble servant of the restful mind, God. Line 32. The infinite as soul, the infinite as mind. And then, as we come over to 124, the infinite as spirit again, all reversing the belief that soul is in body or mind in matter. Line 5, man coexists with and reflects soul, God, for man is God's image. As earth coexists with sun, so body coexists with soul, and man with God. In terms of soul, man is body. In terms of spirit, he is reflection. In terms of mind, he is image, idea. All this is science, line 7, reversing the false testimony of the senses in order that we arrive at the fundamental facts of being. The fundamental facts of man being little b in his relation to God. Please now turn over the tape.